China has made it to the far side of the moon. Chinese state media on Thursday reporting that the country has successfully landed a space probe there. Chinese state TV called the landing a historic moment, and it's a milestone that is seen as a huge development for China's nascent space program. The probe, named the Chang'e 4, launched in early December, reportedly making a so-called soft landing just before 10:30 a.m. Beijing time on Thursday.
Shares of Tesla sank, falling as much as 10% at one point, after the company announced it's cutting the prices for all its cars in the U.S., by $2,000. Also weighing on the stock was fewer than expected deliveries of the Model 3 sedan in the last quarter of the year. Musk has been under intense pressure to deliver on his promise of stabilizing production of Tesla's first mass market vehicle, seen as crucial to achieving long-term profitability.
A big number in the latest jobs report could be both a blessing for the stock market and a reason to worry. The U.S. Labor Department on Friday announcing 312,000 new jobs created in December, far more than expected. Investors have been spooked by weakness in manufacturing, a slowdown in housing, sharp declines in consumer confidence, recent earning warnings from Apple and Delta Airlines, and signs the U.S.-China trade war is dampening the global economy.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January 7th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway, another business week as well. Lots going on this morning here on the program, too. We have put together a good broadcast for you this morning. It's our CEO Spotlight on Monday. Dory McWhorter will be here from the YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago. Dory is the CEO. We'll have a conversation with her to start things off this morning in just a few seconds. But first, also a little bit later in the program, we should mention that the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, is underway in Las Vegas. And Jennifer Jolly, our friend Jennifer, is there, and she's going to join us live from the show to talk about what's hot in gadgets and tech from CES. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. Let's begin, though, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, and stocks in Asia are higher today, with the Nikkei leading the way up nearly 2.5%, nearly 477 points, as trade talks get underway in Beijing to hopefully end the trade dispute between the two countries. The Hang Seng is up nearly 209 points, nearly a percent. The Shanghai up nearly 0.75%. In Europe, markets are generally in the red, with London, Germany, and France off about a third. And futures in the United States pointing toward a mixed open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures up just a fraction. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower. Crude oil is trading at $49.26 a barrel. Couple of other stories that we're following for you this morning. Government figures show that the jobs, you heard there in the opening montage, nearly 312,000 positions last year. That was the big report from the jobs report on Friday. The unemployment gains far greater than the 180,000 new jobs economists added. And that will definitely have some impact on the markets today. Also, a word on Friday, the Federal Reserve plans to watch how the economy performs the rest of this year and adjust rates accordingly. The Federal Reserve chairman speaking in Atlanta on Friday said policymakers will need to take a patient approach this year as they address interest rates and see how the markets are performing. A couple of things happening today. A report on factory orders for November will be delayed because of the partial government shutdown. Numbers were due out this morning. We'll see some other economic reports as well, in addition to CES kicking off in Las Vegas. And again, full report on that coming up a little bit later in the program. We're also learning today some TSA workers have been forced to work overtime to make up for their coworkers who've been calling in sick amid the government shutdown. TSA workers are not being paid during the shutdown. It's now on its 17th day. The sick outs began last week in New York City. They've spread across the country. TSA union officials say some workers have called out so that they can take jobs to help them get paid right away. The YWCA Metropolitan Chicago has been fighting workplace sexual harassment for more than 100 years. and has been boosting its profile among younger people more recently. The organization's CEO, Dory McWhorter, is in our CEO spotlight this morning for a conversation about keeping the YWCA nimble and relevant. Dory, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you. I've been looking forward to our conversation because so many good things are happening at your organization. I want to get into some of those during our conversation this morning. But first, if people aren't aware of what you do at the YWCA, what the YWCA is all about, tell us.
Yeah, so the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago has been around in the city of Chicago for over 140 years. We were founded in 1876, and at the time, it was about helping women relocate to the city, and now we really continue to stay on the forefront of women's issues, so we really focus on three, what we call empowerment priorities. We have this big, lofty mission to eliminate racism and empower women, and we really had to boil that down. So our three areas of focus are safety and wellness, education and training, and economic sustainability.
You took over as CEO in 2013, correct?
Correct.
What is it like to take the reins of an organization with that much history behind it?
It's a lot of responsibility. And it's been a lot of fun just really continuing to understand how we can reinvent ourselves to ensure that we fulfill our mission, but also make sure that we're helping women prepare for the 21st century marketplace.
What were the things you did right away? And maybe you could tell us if those are working, what kind of success you're having?
Well, we had to do a lot of things right away. When I joined the organization, we were really atrophying and we were $10 million, probably losing $1 million a year. The good news is we're now $23 million and we're breaking even. So we're good and we've grown and we've doubled. And what that's been like, though, in terms of the experience, we've had to really focus on getting back to our roots. Who are we? What are we trying to accomplish? How are we going to do that? What are resources? What resources do we have available today in the 21st century that are different than we would have had in 1876, right? So how can we leverage that and really reshape the business model to take advantage of those things?
And just when you say the date, it just, again, my mind blows, 1876 to now, 2018. I mean, so many things are different. So much has changed. Do you run the organization like a business? Do you treat it like an organization or a mix of both, a hybrid of both?
I actually run it as a social enterprise. And to me, what that means is absolutely, I think I take the best of what the business world has to offer, recognizing that we do have a social mission to fulfill. So I really take it as a combination of how do we, and really ask a different question, right? I'm just not asking how we grow the organization to fulfill our mission, but actually asking the question, how do we make the money that we need to fulfill the services that we want to provide? And when you look at it from that mindset, it leads you to different strategies.
Reading up and getting ready for our interview today, there was one story that sort of described it as you kind of run it like a startup. Almost.
I do, because I call it a 140-year-old startup, only because we weren't around 140 years ago. And so we really have to think about what are the tools and the capabilities that we have in 2018 that can really make us successful, like digital, right? Mm-hmm. How do we use digital and integrate that with our business? How do we actually, we launched a yshop.org, which is our e-commerce platform. That's a strategy that wasn't available, but yet we recognize that we have our members and constituents that are also consumers. So how do we leverage that? So there's things that we have available that allows us to reach people in different ways and communicate with them as well as engage them in our work.
The digital thing is probably one of the biggest, I think, because we're all so connected digitally. Give us a sense of how you've done that. What, maybe like an example of that?
Sure. Well, one of the things that we recognize is that we have these physical locations. So we have 9 sites across the entire metropolitan Chicago area. We recognize that people are living in a digital environment, so we can't always expect them to come to our sites. So one of the things we did, we launched an Empower app where we can communicate with our members as well as provide digital training and services to them. In addition to that, we really looked at how we could also reskill and tool people and make sure that they have the tools that they need in the 21st century, right? So one of the things that we've done is we relaunched our Tech Girls program, which focused on girls ages 8 through 14, and also provided training for adult women and people of color, quite honestly.
Did you, when you came in, did you have to remake the leadership of the organization? What kind of challenge was that?
When I first came in, we had such a great legacy of people that were with us, but one of the things that I did was really bring in people that had business skills as well, or that had careers in the private sector. And so now we have this leadership team, which is a nice hybrid of people that have been in the social services sector, as well as people that have been in business. And so I call them my corporate expats. And they just really bring different perspectives and backgrounds to really help us fulfill our mission.
You were talking earlier about the financial part of this to sort of come up above the financial, I don't know how to describe it, but you had to make money. You had to make it a money-making proposition. How difficult was it that you were almost immediately presented with the budget crisis in Illinois, and how did that impact your organization?
It made me be more creative, right? Because we knew that we couldn't rely on those particular streams. For us, it was limited impact because we receive federal funds as well. So those were slightly exposed, but not 100% as in other organizations were. So for us, it was really made us think about what tools do we have available? What assets do we have as an organization? What does that look like? And really get creative around how we can gain additional revenue to be able to actually do the work and not have to lay off people.
And that's something you didn't have to do, right? You didn't have to lay off anybody, or did you?
We didn't lay off anybody. Yeah. No, we actually gave them little increases.
Yeah. So there you go. That's something that it's almost unheard of in the business world. You think of when the financial tight times hit, people automatically hit the bricks people are laid off. Were you up against resistance there?
To some degree, what I did, at the time, while the state was having the budget crisis, but at the same time, if you looked at the rest of the business world, it was thriving, right? We saw market highs and it was such a disconnect to me. How could we do such great work and experience such an organizational really degradation, but then you could see the rest of the marketplace thriving? And so I was like, why aren't we connecting to the tools that help us thrive? And that's what we started doing. So we launched our e-commerce platform, which, you know, in that short period added additional $400,000. That's that's a significant amount of revenue for us, right? To see that type of increase and to see those types of opportunities, we just began to really focus on how we do that and look for other resources in the marketplace as well.
Flash forward to 2018, the budget crisis we think is over for now. You've got a new administration coming in. We're getting ready to change mayors in the city of Chicago. Are we headed into more stable times for organizations like yours, or is there uncertainty here that's concerning?
It's interesting. I always think that as businesses and as an organization, we always have to operate recognizing that there's a large degree of uncertainty. We don't have any sort of guaranteed revenue streams. So I think that every year we're putting a plan together, understanding the landscape of that day and really creating the steps that we need to move forward. One of the things that is probably more unique about us, given that we are a social service agency, is that we really do partner with the private sector a lot more. You know, it's simple. You kind of go where the money is, right? And so for us, it's been about how do we structure ourselves to make us better partners to the private sector in a way that would want them to support our work.
Since you've taken over, the Me Too movement has been a huge deal. How did that change what you did or impact what you do at YWCA?
Well, for us, it really just allow people to see that the work that we do is so relevant. One of the things in our safety and wellness umbrella, we operate the rape crisis lines throughout the city of Chicago, as well as we are the national RAIN support system the local support system for the National RAIN Network, which is the national call-in number. And what it allowed us to really remind people of that our work is so vital even still. But what it also did is allow us to think about different strategies. So what we went to do is we launched an exchange traded fund that actually measures the private sector's actions relative to our work. So one of the criteria for companies to be included or included into our fund is their sexual harassment policies. And even we have 200 companies in our fund, and only 68% of those companies actually have sexual harassment policies. But it gives us an opportunity to have that conversation because we all know that the issue is still so relevant.
The symbol is WOMN.
Mm-hmm.
That's something, I mean, there's a lot of now investors who want that, not just women, but it's something that the people are looking for. What's the success of that fund?
So we just launched in August, and we were at the New York Stock Exchange during our celebration on Giving Tuesday. And so far, it's been very well received, not only from an investor standpoint, but I've been so pleased with the companies that are in the fund really wanting to engage and dig in to what they can be doing to empower women, understanding what our 19 criteria are, and really wanting to adopt those practices. And by the way, these are things that are not just empowering to women, but actually good for companies.
Yeah, and but also good for companies that for those that don't have these policies in place. Do they get pressured by the companies that do? Do they see their name not on this fund and be like, "Wow, I think I need to get there"?
That has absolutely happened already. So we've received calls asking where are they on the list, and when they're not there, they want to know what they can do, and that's exactly what we want to happen. We want this to be an open book test, right? And so to the degree that companies recognize that, you know, these criteria and the criteria range from everything from the typical ones you hear, women on boards, women in leadership, but also sexual harassment policies, paid time off, equal pay, supply chain diversity. So really getting deep into the organization's operations and practices, which we, by the way, if they're, whether they're a public company or not, we want everyone to think about.
Earlier I said it's 2018, almost 2019. It's, you know, in the year 2019, isn't it a shame that there are not more women CEOs in boardrooms and running C-suites?
Absolutely. And I think it's when you think about marketplace value, if there's an opportunity to tap into talent that could bring additional value, I think that that's the shame of it, right? So I don't believe it's just a nice to have. I believe that it's smart business to have a diverse workforce that could bring different perspectives. We know that women are drive 70% of the consumer behavior, and that's a significant amount of numbers when you translate that into the trillions of dollars that means in our economy. And to not tap into that talent, I just think is a missed opportunity. And we all suffer because of it.
Aside from shaming the companies that aren't there yet, what are some of the other concrete things that YWCA, you do out there advocating for these things?
Well, one of the things that we do is we want companies to know that it is an open book test, that these aren't a secret, that we want to partner with them to increase these practices, but also demonstrate the ways that they can engage with us as well to support their employees.
We've on this program had conversations before about the importance of mentoring, and especially mentoring for young girls and young women. How do you feel about mentoring, and why isn't there more of it?
I think mentoring is important. Just by background, I started off at Arthur Andersen, which is no longer here, right? Speaking of long, yeah. old companies, but in the accounting, clearly I was an accounting professional back then. But I think that having mentors even early in my career and still even now is just such an important aspect to have people navigate and understand. As you've mentioned, there are not a lot of women CEOs and women in senior leadership positions. So to the degree that you have men and women helping those understand what are the ways that they can get there, I think is extremely important and part of the process to get us there.
What is the process? What kind of process is there for mentoring? Is it something that a young person goes and finds out, or is it something that you as a CEO and your fellow leaders in an organization have to start and go toward the young people?
I think it's both. I think that you need formal mentorship programs that companies can facilitate, but I also think because mentoring as an individual is such a personal experience as well, that you should seek out people that you feel can support you on that journey. And most people, if they're nice people, are willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And whether you call it mentoring or, like I like to call it, just, you know, being an ear for people, I think it's really important to take those opportunities, but also to ask.
You mentioned some of your background. What is it, do you think, from your background, from your experience, that's helped you help prepare you for this moment now as CEO of YWCA?
All of it. I spent 20 years in management consulting and accounting, and I think the ability to go and understand problems, assess problems, identify solutions mm-hmm. has been part of what I've been trained to do as a consultant. And I think being at the YWCA has given me the opportunity to really dig into that and actually have to live with the recommendations I make. I'm like, my consulting years, I'm like, do this, bye-bye.
Right.
But now I can actually stay and understand what more we can be doing and how the sort of the solutions we have in mind can evolve.
You're from Racine, Wisconsin. You were born in Racine, Wisconsin.
Well, I was born here in Chicago. Okay. I was born in Inglewood, but then my mom moved us to Wisconsin pretty early in life.
How does having those roots here help you do your job better?
I think that understanding that there's so much opportunity here because I am a child of the Midwest. And for me, it really helps me to see because my mom was a young parent as well. And to have those opportunities to start in Head Start, but go on to University of Wisconsin, get my MBA from Kellogg, it shows me what's possible. And I do think that the Chicago, specifically broadly the Midwest, has a certain type of attitude that really respects people sort of pulling themselves up and getting that support and willing to provide that support. And that helps me shape the work we do and think about that there's so many opportunities. We just have to help people, give them access to those opportunities.
What's the long-term plan for YWCA?
To be here as long as they need us, to be here as long as we're needed, but also continue to just evolve as what it means to be a social enterprise. How do we create value as well as a strong social impact as well?
Has there been an aha moment in your life that has either changed your direction or further solidified what your decisions have been in terms of your career and life?
I don't know that there's been one particular aha, but I do believe that as the more work that I get to do at the YWCA, particularly as I get to merge sort of this private sector thinking with the ability to create social change, it excites me very much. And I think that I'm hitting my stride and understanding that this is possible, that, you know, whether we call it a double bottom line, I'm not a person who says people over profit or profit over people. I don't think that that's the case. I think that it's both all the time. And for me to get an opportunity to realize that at the YWCA has been so exciting. So if anything, this has been my aha moment that, oh yeah, this is possible. We need to do more of this.
People at the beginning of the year always try to come up with New Year's resolutions. And I know leadership, doing better in business, being a better employee, being a better CEO, all of those things are probably front and center for people. Do you have any advice for people who have resolutions to maybe be a better leader or be a better employee or be a better person as the year begins here?
You know, I was just on my way over here. I left our leadership team meeting, and we have a coach in helping us become better leaders. And one of the things he said, I'll get the quote wrong, but I'll actually forget the person it's attributed wrong, so I shouldn't even brought it up. Yeah. But since I'm already on this path, sure, I might as well finish it, because now it'll be a mystery. But the quote was to know others as wise, but to know thyself is enlightenment. And I just think that as we continue to move into the new year, the more we continue to know what makes us tick and what we can do to be better people, that absolutely bleeds into what we can do to support others.
At the end of the day, when it comes to giving a report card on your own success, are you hard on yourself? And what would your report card be?
I am not hard on myself, because I definitely resort to, I'm just a human being figuring it out every single day. And so I actually have a mantra that I can't make mistakes. I actually just have a series of unplanned learning opportunities. And so for me, I really do lean into that and just recognize that, you know, we grow and we learn. If we're doing it right, then we're expanding. And that's my goal.
Unplanned learning
opportunities. Yeah, I keep it light.
Dory, it's wonderful meeting you. Thank you very much for coming in.
Steve.
And please come back and see us sometime.
Absolutely.
Dory McWhorter is the CEO of YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. You can find more about them online at ywcachicago.org. And we're going to continue our conversation with Dory after the bell this morning and post more of that in the podcast of The Opening Bell later this morning at wgnradio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the show. Some big tech news happening this morning. Apparently, Apple and Samsung have come to an agreement on the new smart TVs being able to stream iTunes content. Samsung Electronics announced yesterday that its new smart TV will support Apple's iTunes movies and shows, as well as Apple's AirPlay 2 beginning this spring. An iTunes movie and TV app will appear on Samsung 2019 model smart TVs, and 2018 models will get the app through a firmware update apparently later on this year. Well, in Las Vegas, the Consumer Electronics Show, CES 2019, kicks off officially tomorrow, the annual showcase for technology and consumer electronics from around the world. Joining us from there this morning is Jennifer Jolly. Jennifer is the founder of Techish, a friend of our program here, also a columnist on tech for USA Today and the New York Times. Jennifer, good early morning to you from Las Vegas.
Hey, good morning. That's right. You know, the giant consumer electronics show, the world's largest consumer electronics trade show, doesn't actually start until tomorrow. But I think we have got what could potentially be the biggest scoop of all outside of Las Vegas, about 15 miles south of Las Vegas in Henderson, Nevada, where KB Home, construction giant KB Home, has just unveiled the first ever full-scale prototype entire 3,200 square foot smart home of the future. It's absolutely incredible.
This sounds like something from the Jetsons. You know, where the food comes out and the vacuum cleaner comes out and there's the robot. Is it that height? Is it that kind of thing? Or is it more subdued than that?
Oh, it is pretty much that kind of thing. So it's called the KB Home Project, and it's the first house created from the foundation up with, to your point, the latest Jetsons, like new tech embedded, well, everywhere. So as soon as you walk through the front door, the house wakes up. The blinds rise, lights come on to mimic time of day, matching your natural circadian rhythms. And of course, there is a robot. Nope, not Rosie. It's Keeper. He roams the house like a guard dog during the day, but he can do all sorts of other things when you're home, like project movies or play games. But one of the coolest things, Steve, just inside the front door, you push a button and a wall can move. So you press a button and you can change the space. The entire wall moves so you can have more space just off the kitchen to entertain, or you can have a spare bedroom. And in this spare bedroom, right now, it's set up like a spare bedroom, but all you have to do is kind of all transformer-like, press a panel on the wall, and the wall folds itself up, and you have a home office. And the craziest part of this is you do it. You bring the bed down, you put the bed back up, and you have the desk, and it doesn't touch anything on the desk. We've been doing this over and over with a glass of water because I'm like, how does this happen that the wall unfolds a transformer-like and you don't even spill a glass of water on the desk? It's pretty amazing.
Well, you know, and as you mentioned some of this stuff, I mean, it's for a lot of people listening, they probably have one or two or three or four of these things already in their Internet of Things home. So this sort of just brings it all together, doesn't it?
That's exactly right. You know, we've seen most of the different parts of this tech before. Smart Whirlpool appliances that can help you cook, even help you wash the dishes in the kitchen. Google really is the brains of this entire operation with smart connected screens, voice activation, Google Home working throughout the entire home. There are more than 400 connected gadgets in this home in all. You know, you walk into the bathrooms and you've got these smart Kohler toilets where the seat lifts up and it self-cleans, and I'll just leave it at that. But one of the really amazing things you actually can't see, but it's one of the most significant parts of this whole home, is the Delos wellness system. There's air quality sensors embedded in the walls, so the second you do anything like spray hairspray or cook or even spray some perfume on, it senses that and pumps fresh air in right away. So that's pretty incredible. This whole integration of not only all the smart devices living under one roof and playing really nicely together, but this whole wellness intelligence platform that monitors, calibrates for temperature, humidity, air quality, pollutants, also adjusts for water purification, even adjusts lighting and shades to match that time of day for their own circadian rhythms. And KB Holmes was telling me what's really important about this, the reason they did it, is because there's a huge push now. People really, really want their homes to deliver a lot more in terms of health, wellness, flexibility, and sustainability overall. So this truly is a glimpse into the future, and I have to say, standing here in the middle of this home, it is awesome.
Jennifer, I'm sure people listening, a few of them are probably saying, okay, this sounds really cool, but how affordable is this going to be? Any sense of what all of this might cost somebody to put together?
Yeah, now while this model we're in right now is not for sale, the base price of this home, based here in Henderson, Nevada, in the Inspirata community, square footage, other factors, would be around $400,000. But the cost of this particular souped-up version is about double that, with the highest-end fixtures and features. But KB Home said they're optimistic that as these advanced features are adopted more widely and become more mainstream, that price will become much more affordable.
Yeah, it sounds like this is going to be one of those things that's going to be driven by demand, and people really want these things, so that's how this is going to go forward. Jennifer, can
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, can we talk more about the show? Because I know you've been already checking the scene out. What's going to be the hot thing at CES this year? Or are you at it?
Well, I'm pretty much at it, of course. But truly, this AI, the artificial intelligence, the smart everything. As we've already seen a smart kitty litter toilet, a smart kitty litter toilet. Yeah, cat toilet. Yeah, I said that. It's true. It's insane. We're seeing, we saw indestructible pantyhose. It's like every single thing you could imagine is getting smarter, a touch of tech, more integration. 5G speeds are being unveiled this year in terms of faster download and faster speeds for your phones. We'll see the typical, you know, thinner, faster everythings. And then there will be a large discussion over privacy and how we really move forward with these connected devices and connected everythings, but remain secure and private, how we keep our data and information more secure.
I know that you've been posting some stuff already. And by the way, folks, go over to Jennifer Jolly on Twitter and also find her on Instagram, because she posts all kinds of cool photos and videos, and over to Techish as well. But robots have been a big deal. And I know you found a little companion puppy, is it? A social robot puppy?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I found the first smart companion robot called Lovat. And, you know, in the past, we've seen robots in pretty much every shape and size, but they've really just been ideas. They've been dreams. They've been visions of the future. Total robot revolution happening here. Not only have we seen the robot here in this home, the Kika robot, but there's a robot suitcase, an autonomous suitcase that will follow you around, which sounds crazy, but if you travel as much as I do, your hands are always full with your cell phone, your room key, I'm juggling stuff all the time. This, you just have this awesome little suitcase that follows you around with a slew of sensors that can duck in and out and around, so it avoids other people. I've seen that Lovat robot that's built just for the sole purpose of being a companion for humans. So it doesn't do anything like Alexa integration, Amazon voice integration. It's just there to make you feel good. It's cute. It's cuddly. It's warm. It always wants to be picked up. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So we'll continue. We saw a robot bread making machine, a robot laundry folding machine. So yeah, this is the year that the robots are becoming real.
Jennifer, best to you. Have fun. I know there's a lot of things that you've seen that you're not even allowed to talk to us about yet, but perhaps later in the week we'll see some more of those things on your Twitter and Instagram feeds.
Absolutely. You know, I'm here for you and just can't wait to bring all of these things into the studio one of these days.
All right.
You know, even mashing them for the next time we see you.
Lovely. Can't wait. Jennifer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jennifer Jolly, the founder of Techish.com and columnist at the USA Today and New York Times at CES out in Las Vegas, CES 2019. Make sure you follow Jennifer on Twitter at Jennifer Jolly and over at Instagram as well for all things CES this week, CES 19.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat to weak open this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures off just a fraction. NASDAQ and S&P futures off about a quarter percent to a third. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, originally we were looking forward to the end of the week, January 11, when some very important production reports would be released by the USDA. That won't happen this Friday because the USDA delayed several major U.S. and world crop reports because of the partial government shutdown and new release dates for the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report and other data originally scheduled for this Friday will be set once government funding is restored. We will not get the quarterly report on U.S. grain stocks. We'll not get the final production numbers on the 2018 crop year. And we'll not get the USDA report on winter wheat plantings for harvest in 2019. We'll await another announcement when those reports will become available. And, of course, the Farm Bureau Convention gets underway on Friday of this week. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. China is sounding a positive note ahead of talks with Washington this week on a sprawling trade dispute that threatens to chill global economic growth. But the two sides face lengthy wrangling over technology and future relationships. Both sides have expressed an interest in settling the tariff fight over Beijing's technology ambitions, but neither has indicated its stance has changed since a December 1st agreement on by President Trump and the Chinese president to postpone further increases. So we'll be watching very closely as those talks get underway in China. With no weekend breakthrough to end the prolonged government shutdown, President Trump standing firm in his border wall funding demands, and newly empowered House Democrats are planning to step up the pressure on Trump and Republican lawmakers to reopen the government by passing a series of single bills to fund various government agencies. Trump showed no signs of budging on his demand for more than $5 billion for a wall along the U.S.-Mexican border. And German factory orders dropped in November, dragged down by a fall in demand from other Eurozone countries. The Economy Ministry of Germany says this morning that overall orders were 1% lower than the previous month, following just a slight gain in October. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Monday, January 7th. Today's report on factory orders for November will be delayed because of the partial government shutdown. Numbers were due this morning. They are reported by the Census Bureau, which is closed by the government shutdown. Analysts had been expecting a slight rebound in factory orders after October's decline. They see factory orders increasing 0.4%. We'll see the ISM non-manufacturing index as well today. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, the floor opens at the Consumer Electronics Show tomorrow. Constellation Brands, KB Home, Bed Bath & Beyond have earnings on Wednesday. We'll also get a look at the Fed minutes on Wednesday. Thursday, the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell speaks at the Economic Club in Washington, D.C. Sears will return to bankruptcy court to potentially get a decision that could determine its future. And on Friday, we'll get the Consumer Price Index. Just some of the things that could move the markets, and especially today on this 1st of 7th of January 2019.